Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Hugs from Heaven, and they can be found at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs spelled with a Z. Our guest tonight is Dr. Michael Grosso, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, anything interesting you have to share with us today?
Well, I see an article on my desk. I see you have one on yours. We talked a little bit about this, was it a year ago?
Last year. This is old, but they've resurrected it because it seems that Simon & Schuster jumped on the bandwagon and decided to get hold of this story and make it into yet another book. If people recall, last year, it was a Friday night in March, which is the month coming up, and somebody passing by noticed a car upside down in a river, and this car had flipped over 14 hours before it was discovered, and in it was the driver, a mom, who died on impact, and still alive 14 hours later, upside down in this river, was this baby Lily, who basically was in hypothermia already, 14 hours in the cold upside down. But the car seat had kept her head just above the water. But the most amazing thing was that when the emergency rescue people arrived, I believe there were four of them, all of them heard a voice, a woman's voice saying, "Help me." And they rushed to the car expecting to find a living adult, and they didn't. And that was then what triggered the whole story about angels coming to help you at a time of need. And, of course, Simon & Schuster jumped on this and made it into a book, which releases today. And that's why this article is back here. Now, just for our listeners who are into social media, we've posted the article again on our Facebook page. You can comment there on it. And if you decide to go ahead and buy this book, we haven't read it yet, so we can't tell you anything about the book. But if you go ahead and buy this book, please use the link that takes you to Amazon. The link we've provided shows that it comes from Forever Family Foundation, so Amazon will make a donation to us for whatever you buy along with the book. And even if you just go to buy the book and then don't buy the book, buy other stuff, because Amazon is good that way.
This might come under the category of the worst idea ever. A Lithuanian engineer designed a roller coaster of death. And the way they describe it was a euthanasia coaster. The rider would slowly climb to more than 500 meters, then would have a few minutes to think back on life and contemplate the decision. At the top, they'd say a prayer, blow a kiss to relatives before pressing the fall button and plummeting into the long, steep plunge following by the first 360-degree loop. That's where the engineer said most riders would die. Traveling at that speed, they'd experience G-forces and a loss of consciousness and cerebral hypoxia, lack of oxygen, which causes a sense of euphoria. I think that...
What was the purpose of this thing?
So people can experience what he would call the euphoric death-like state.
So they would, is it just a state? Do they come back afterwards, or they're dead?
Oh, no, no. This is temporary.
Okay.
But I would think that the... it would be far from a euphoric experience. I think the fear might kill you.
Okay.
That is a bad idea. The, you know, as our listeners might suspect, we get a tremendous number of calls and emails on a daily basis. Fran fielding a great number of them. There's one that stands out. About 2 weeks ago, Flan had picked up the phone. It was fairly late at night. It was about 9:30, 10 p.m. And the gentleman on the other end said that he just discovered his brother dead, lying in a field. And he had yet to call the police, but he called us so that we could send over a medium so he would know what really happened before he called the police. And, you know, we just... As you recall, we just looked at each other.
I also think I did tell him that I thought he watched too much television.
Yeah, well, you know, that's taking it to the... A lot of people have a misconception of what we do as a foundation.
Right, that's true. But also a misconception of what mediums do, and that spirit is something that needs to be honored. And this concept, this wrongful concept, comes from watching too much television, you know, and it's problematic. You know, they term every kind of a show a reality show, even when it's not real. So you really can't blame him. Here he was terribly concerned and distraught over the death of his brother and figured, wow, on TV, police botch everything up. So let me cover myself by getting a medium, because on television, mediums get everything right.
Right.
So, you know, made sense to him. Just an unfortunate situation.
Yeah, that kind of hit home. And I mentioned before, I mean, some of the misconceptions, you know, that we face as a foundation. I mean, as many of our listeners know, I mean, we approach everything from the perspective of science, and we want to provide information about all these things that can be helpful to people that are in grief or, you know, simply curious. And a lot of people mistakenly think that we are an organization of mediums, that we somehow, the mediums work for us. Of course, our involvement with mediums is that we certify them in a process.
For the purpose of protecting bereaved people from fraudulent and underdeveloped mediums.
Right.
That's the purpose of it.
And we are not, and mediums graciously participate in a lot of our events, you know, including fundraising, and we're very grateful for that. But we're not booking agents for mediums. We cannot get appointments for people. People can check the certified medium list on the Forever Family Foundation website, and there are links to each medium's homepage, webpage, and contact information. And you need to contact the medium directly, and unfortunately, we can't, you know, help in that regard. So we just wanted to get it clear what we do. We're more than happy to talk to people, but check the website first before you call so you know what we do and what we don't do.
Right. And also, I just want to throw one more thing in. When you are on the certified medium page looking for a medium, you'll have to click on their name to go to their website to learn more about them. But a lot of times we hear stories and we encourage people to look through the list, and if there is one that jumps out at them, one that resonates with them, you know, that may be a little indication that that may be the one to,
right,
to go with.
We're going to go to a break. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Dr. Michael Grosso, so stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Michael Grosso. Our sponsor is Hugs from Heaven, and they can be found at hugsfromheaven.com, and that's Hugs spelled with a Z. Bob?
And Michael Grosso was born in New York City. He's a teacher, an author, a painter. His interests span psychical research, metaphysical art, the parapsychology of religion, and primarily philosophy. He received his PhD in philosophy and studied classical Greek at Columbia University. He's taught at City University of New York, Marymount Manhattan College, the City University of New Jersey. He's published books on topics ranging from life after death to the mythologies of end time. His latest book, and one we're going to be discussing tonight, is The Man Who Could Fly, St. Joseph of Cupertino and the Mystery of Levitation. Michael presently resides in Charlottesville, Virginia. He's affiliated with the Division of Personality Studies at the University of Virginia, and he's on the board of directors of the American Philosophical Practitioners Association and is the past editor of its journal. He has a very interesting blog. If you go to consciousness-unbound.net. Welcome, Michael. It's great to have you back. It's been a while.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And I guess a good place to start with The Man Who Could Fly is tell us a little bit about who Joseph was and maybe a bit about his background.
Well, his background is very simple and impoverished. From southern Italy in the 17th century, very turbulent century. And he starts out almost completely deprived. His father is on the lam from debt collectors. His mother is virtually living in a stable when he was born. He got sick very early on, and I think that was an important part of the development of his psyche, because when you're sick and immobilized for 6 years, there's no place you can go where there's no television to watch in the 17th century, but inside yourself. And I think that that sort of helps to explain the deep inner life that Joseph had from the very beginning. And the story is that beginning from the age 8, he started to have these ecstasies and sort of lose his sense of being in this world and being carried away by visions of another world. And it took him a long time. He started out trying to be a shoemaker, and he failed completely. What he wanted to do was enter the church, and that was the only place where he was comfortable. So when he was finally ordained as a priest at the age of 25, he began a 35-year career as an increasingly the famous and disturbing, I should say, mystic and ecstatic, because he seemed to have an amazing talent, we'll call it a talent, for leaving his body, going out of himself. We call this ecstasy, ecstasis, standing outside of yourself. So he, from the beginning, he had these experiences and of ecstasy and seeing visions, and then one day, standing in front of a painting of the Madonna, he got so carried away that he levitated for the first time in public. And that launched his career as a famous levitator. And I'll just say, by way of introduction, that these levitations, however strange and spectacular they may sound to us, and they certainly are, caused him a great deal of trouble in his life with the church. And in his role as a priest, it was very difficult for him to perform his ordinary functions as a priest because he really didn't have control over these, he would call them fits tardimento, it means being dazed. But that was a way of covering it up. But they were, for him, were he would be simply swept away and enraptured by visions of heaven, of the Madonna, or just the sound of music could do it. So that's the beginning and sort of the premise of his 35-year career as one of the most famous miracle workers in Europe at during that century.
Yeah, it was interesting. As you mentioned, these fantastic levitations. He was also extremely telepathic. He was a healer. You know, people flocked to him. And yet the church, by design, kept them isolated from the masses. I mean, that must have been a tremendous conflict for him.
Well, it was, because on the one hand, he had a joyful disposition and wanted to overflow his joy and share it with others and function as a priest. But the church found him so disruptive, you know, and the church is also concerned about his attitude toward his phenomena. They wanted to be sure that that he wasn't getting a little too big for his britches, we'll put it that way.
Right.
And because a person with that kind of charismatic power can draw, as you know from the book, enormous crowds. Wherever he went, people were ready to follow him. So the church was very concerned that he remain as orthodox as possible, and if possible, to remove him from the temptation, as it were, to fame. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it was harsh, and they treated him rather harshly sometimes. But on the other hand, he seemed to talk, he often spoke as if he was quite happy to be left alone. He would say, all right, if you're worried about all these things that are happening to me when I go outside, meet the people, let me stay in my cell by myself. And gradually, that's what happened to him in the course of his life. But it was very difficult to keep the people away from him. So you're quite on the mark there when you say it was deeply conflicted for Joseph to have this to be in this situation.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, as I read in the book, I mean, the friar was extremely telepathic, and you wrote how it got to the point that everyone in his town, in Cupertino, avoided him unless, as you say, their conscience was squeaky clean. So
right.
Might that be why even today many people are fearful of such abilities, that we all have too much to hide?
Well, that's a very interesting thought, Bob, because I myself met a psychic. I have met a number of psychics whom I heard that they had reputations of being able to predict your future. And even though I was interested in meeting them and talking with them, I had a basic reaction. I kind of acquired an instant skepticism. I didn't want to believe that I was standing in front of a person that could read my mind or tell me my future.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It could be, or especially, I suppose, if I was guilt-ridden, or made to feel guilt-ridden, I wouldn't be too comfortable being in the presence of somebody who could peer into my wicked soul. So
right.
Yes, there's a resistance that many people probably have, precisely for the reason that you just mentioned.
You mentioned at the beginning, the people may find, the notion of levitating a little bit unbelievable, and it made me think that, I mean, we focus a lot on survival, and many of our listeners have heard us over the years discuss extraordinary phenomena, and most of our listeners, I would think, are convinced that we survive physical death, but a lot of them, surprisingly, would bristle at the notion that levitation is possible. Why do you think that is? Somebody will believe in life after death, but they would think that levitation can't be real?
Well, it's perfectly reasonable and understandable. I mean, I would be skeptical if I hadn't done all that research. And it's a very, very rare phenomenon, even though there are lots of related types of PK, mind over matter effects. I mean, healing and poltergeists, for example, are part of the lore of survival research. But nevertheless, it has to be admitted that this is an extraordinarily rare phenomenon. So it's quite natural that many people who would believe in life after death might hesitate about that. But I would say if they're open-minded and not committed ideologically to reductive materialism, if they were to confront the evidence and see how many eyewitness reports exist, not only in the case of St. Joseph, but just in the Catholic Church alone, there's about 200 saints that for which there is pretty decent evidence that they actually levitated, and that's only one tradition. I mean, we don't know about countless other traditions. The neat thing about the Catholic Church is that they have this legalistic tradition they derive from ancient Rome. So they keep records of everything, and which is not to say that some of the earlier records may have been exaggerated, but by the time you get to the 17th century, the church is getting more and more sophisticated and more critical, and so they're certainly not interested in promoting phony saints. and phony reports about phony levitations. That's the complete opposite of what they want. They don't need that kind of bad press, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, what I also found interesting is that not being very familiar with, you know, the traditions of the Catholic Church, I didn't realize that, a saint must prove himself after death before receiving the accolade, which is interesting when you think about it, because we found so many people with deep religious convictions that condemn communication with the dead, you know, and yet they ask their saints to prove themselves, you know, after their death. So where's the disconnect?
Yeah, that's an I've never thought of that. That's an interesting point that you just made, Bob. Well, I guess the idea that the saints can do it because they're saints. There are on more intimate terms with the Almighty, whereas ordinary folks who mess around, so to speak, or try to communicate with the dead, from the point of view of a very conservative church, I don't know what the view is now, would say that you're playing with fire, because there's always the risk that you get in touch with some diabolical spirit. And so it's better to have faith and stay cool and not get too pushy in terms of trying to unveil the secrets and the mysteries of the beyond. That would be the best reasonable defense of the church's attitude in that manner.
Now, in Joseph's case, his healing powers actually increased after he died, as you've chronicled in the book.
That's right. After he died, many of the Catholic saints say this, and it's pretty far out. They say that after they die, they can do more. They're more effective. Because they're closer to the source of the power, so to speak, and they're undistracted by the needs of everyday life. So it could be that, but it could also be, and I'm just going to play the slightly critical point here, that after a holy person has died and people believe that he or she is in a heavenly place, that those who pray for these miracles believe more intensely, and it could conceivably be, and this would be extraordinary if it were true, but it could also be possible that they heal themselves by their own placebo effect, so to speak, their own beliefs.
Right.
I'm not saying that's the case, but that may be one explanation. I don't know. There are a lot of things here that... I draw back from concluding on. I only like to talk about the things I can be sure about.
Right.
Records, what they show.
Well, you know, one thing that I noticed in the book is that you once conducted your own informal levitation experiment while you were teaching at a university, which I thought was really interesting. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, yes, that was a very interesting experience, and it did open me up to the possibility of levitation. I was teaching a course on spiritual developments and meditation practices, team teaching it with another colleague, and we were meditating together, chanting together, talking about shamanism, talking about unusual phenomena. So one of the students, a young woman, told the story of how the games that she played as a child, where the children would sort of sing together, breathe together, and touch somebody, and then raise them up into the air. And I had heard something about that. And so I said, let's try it in class one day, and we did. And we got this rather heavy ex-Marine, who must have weighed about 200 pounds. He was the target person, and then I selected four young women whom I thought were, you know, the frailest looking. They were not muscle-bound, that's for sure. And they just put their two fingers underneath their knees and their elbows, and we went through a little chanting and a little breathing together. And then I said, lift. And, Bob, I was utterly amazed, and everybody in that room was amazed when it worked. Up in the air, this ex-Marine went, and I will never forget the look on his face of utter astonishment. And he the young women were just touching him. They weren't pushing. And I could see there was no way they could have lifted this big guy up with what they were doing with their fingers. But the mere contact with his body resulted in a levitation. And he hovered up there for a split second, and then very gently, fortunately for him, he didn't come down crashing, he just lowered back into the ground. And I must say that I never succeeded in reproducing that experiment again. And the reason I think that's the case is I never had a class like I had, like that class, where we worked together to form a kind of unified mind field. And we were very, it was a very good class and very effective.
I'm reminded of, some of the physical mediums from the past and some still today that have these, seances where there are levitations and various physical. Mm-hmm. And one mm-hmm. of the criteria is that everybody in the room has to have this combined energy and synergy and positive thought. And a lot of the times they even sing and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
I guess when you combine that with certain studies about, the power of prayer and how, combined thought and emotions of people, I mean, as you reflect back on it, do you think that's sort of the conduit that made this happen, the combined energy of the people in the room?
Well, I do think so, and as far as my experiment, but I think the same principle, Bob, applies to the saints, because they're not doing their thing in a vacuum. They are in a world that is, especially, back in the 17th century, where the Catholic Church was embroiled in controversies and very intense, going through turbulent, intense times. But the group consciousness, the belief system of the culture at the time, the artwork, the architecture, the paintings, there are paintings all over the place of showing, angels floating in the air, many suggestive cues, many beliefs, and traditions that allowed for the possibility of these things to happen. And that, I believe, increased the likelihood or the probability that they actually did. Joseph just happened to have the perfect personality, the perfect sensibility and psychophysical, whatever it was that was going on inside his body, that made these things possible. But it was also because he had an appropriate world that acknowledged the reality of these miraculous types of phenomena. So whether it be a seance or a classroom such as I conducted, or a whole period of religious history or a culture, the social context is a very crucial part of the story.
Yeah, and it sure does seem that there was more going on in Joseph's case, because it wasn't only the levitations. It was, as we mentioned, the psychic ability, the healings, this perfume-like odor that he came out of his body, infused wisdom. Do you suspect that maybe the universe had a hand in this, whether you call it the divine intervention or just access to other realms, but it seemed more than a simple case of PK.
Well, I agree. I mean, the PK is such a dry little word that we just scientifically try to identify a certain kind of phenomenon, but it certainly does look like that there are forces that are transcendent, that can't be controlled. The thing about Joseph's levitations, in fact, all of the things that he clearly did, he never claimed responsibility. It was always with the assistance of the divine that he was able to achieve all of these things.
Yeah.
And his basic advice to everybody was, you got a problem? Lay it in the hands of the Almighty. Pray to the Madonna. Trust the divine element. And just open yourself up to that. That was pretty much his whole psychology. And he just did it with a vengeance himself.
Right.
Got some amazing results.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Michael Grosso. The book, The Man Who Could Fly, St. Joseph of Cupertino and the Mystery of Levitation. We're going to go to a break. We come back. We have lots more to talk about with Michael, so stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net. Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Michael Grosso. Our sponsor is Hugs from Heaven, and they can be found at hugsfromheaven.com, and spell that hugs with a Z at the end. And you would want to sign up for our next webinar, Suicide Loss Perspectives from Parents, Therapists, and a Medium. That's on Tuesday, March 1st from 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. All the details are on our events page on the Forever Family Foundation website. Please follow the directions to reserve your seats. Once you register and pay, your registration will go through an approval process. We have discounted the $20 seats to $5 for our members, and watch for additional webinars as posted on the Forever Family Foundation events page. check that page on our website regularly for newly added events, webinars, visionary explorers, and afterlife discussion groups. And just to let our listeners know that this weekend coming up is the Visionary Explorers group on Saturday, February 13th. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that other traditional non-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, or Amazon Smile, great nonprofits, and Wellzoo. Just make certain that you have designated Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice in each of these donation opportunities. So you do the shopping, and they make the donations to us. Visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all event links, information, and registration forms. And finally, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Michael Grosso, the man who could fly. Not Michael's not the man who could fly, but St. Joseph Cupertino.
I'm working on it.
Okay. So these levitations, are we talking about an inch or two off the ground, or are we talking about rising to the ceiling?
Well, both and more. That's the neat thing about Joseph. He often rose a few inches off the ground while he was saying Mass. He'd get so carried away. After all, the Mass is a ritual of communication with the divine. He felt himself getting closer, and then, hey, heaven's up there, and up he started to move. But often he would float that way and maybe was not even seen. But so that was one form. But he often, when he was visited in his cell by people, would get a little excited, and up he would go, and he would float right up to the ceiling. When he was outside in the nave of a church with a towering ceiling, there are reports, eyewitness reports, of him levitating many feet. In fact, the longest, the highest, it was something like about 31 feet into the air, or even higher than that. On one occasion, he got carried away and sort of floated like a bird up onto the top of an olive tree, and was observed to sort of, like a bird, hover on a branch, and the branch would just tremble. Then when he woke up and he realized he's on top of a tree, he got sort of panicked, and they had to bring a ladder to help him down because he didn't know where he was. So he moved, his levitations took many shapes and forms, from a few inches to many feet into the air. And as far as the length of time was concerned, it would be from anywhere from a few seconds or a few minutes to 1 or 2 hours in several cases. And he's not the only saint that I've read about who managed to hover and remain in the air for rather prolonged periods of time.
Hmm. So if somebody is up at a height of 10 or 20 feet for an hour, it tends to discount the possibility of fraud, doesn't it? It would be very difficult.
Well, yes, and it discounts the possibility of an illusion. Whereas in a lot of the mediumistic reports, and I'm not saying this explains all of them, where it's dark, where it's obscure, where it's fleeting, where the effect is fleeting, one could easily argue that, you know, the individuals were simply misled by their perceptions. But after 35 years of Joseph performing his levitations in full view in daylight, in front of hundreds, if not thousands, of people by the end of 35 years, it adds up, there can be no question, at least in my mind, of any explanation but the fact that he really did what everyone said that he did do.
So, yeah, and as I was, you know, reading through the book, 35 years pretty much with continuous witnesses, you know, numbering in the thousands, is it frustrating to you that he still ignored? I mean, I had never heard of him until I came upon your book. So, I mean, was that one of your motivations in writing the book, is getting the word out?
Yes, that was. I think the phenomenon, and it's not so much Joseph, whom I admire, is a very interesting story, but the phenomenon, which is not confined to one person, and it is so extraordinary and so challenging to science and to our common sense understanding of the world that I think the story needs to be told. But it's not completely ignored. Almost everybody that I know who has studied the evidence quickly concludes that this is the real stuff. Jule Eisenbud, the psychoanalyst, wrote one of the most extraordinary sentences about Joseph. He said, these phenomena are more challenging to science than Einstein or Darwin was, because it implies something so completely beyond what we currently understand. So those who have taken the trouble to study the evidence are immediately convinced. And by the way, Joseph is very popular still in southern Italy. He's very well known. But you're right. He's not like a famous saint like St. Paul or St. Francis, for example, who is beloved of, you know, the whole world. They know about him.
Right.
Maybe my book will help.
Yeah, I hope so. What's really intriguing is the state, this ecstatic state that he would get into. I mean, while he was in this, it was almost like a death-like trance. He was impervious to the outside world. I mean, he wouldn't react to stimulus, like even pain.
Right.
And this is... as you noted in the book, there's a similarity to these altered states of consciousness that NDEers fall into. There are similarities, are there not?
Yes, there are, as a matter of fact. I go out of my way to show, point for point, that in a way, Joseph was in a constant near-death state. And you know, he was literally often described by his contemporaries when they would see him. He would, and after the ascetic practices, they would, you know, describe him as looking like a cadaver. I mean, he wasn't the most robust, healthy-looking guy, but that was deliberate. The idea was to weaken all of his biological instincts and his normal psychological needs and impulses, quiet all of that down, so that one becomes transparent to the transcendent powers, the invisible energies of the divine, however you wish to describe it. And so when he went into these states, his body became cataleptic, ice cold, impervious to pain, impervious to fire. Sometimes when he did levitate, often he didn't just levitate, he just stayed there in ecstasy on the ground. But when he levitated, sometimes he'd be floating in front of a bunch of candles. Nothing ever caught fire. Neither his clothing nor his body were injured by the flames. And then to be sure that he was in an ecstatic state, some of his brothers, fellow monks, would pinch him or sting him, and just to prove that he was completely insensible. So he was sort of in another world mentally. And somehow his body imitated where his mind was, which was, you know, up there somewhere, beyond. And it's very strange and very mysterious.
Yeah, I had a... I liked in the book, I think you said something to the effect that Joseph, if you said the word survival to him, he said that would have seemed a dull way to referring to the ecstasy. And so that's the same thing that you were describing, that maybe like the near-death experiences and people that go out of body say that their excursions are ineffable, you know, and so they're in a world that they can't describe.
Exactly. Yeah. So Joseph's story is not quite that strange, because there are bits and pieces of it that we can see in our own world. And as you just pointed out, this is quite true, that these magnificent, mysterious near-death experiences, which we know so much about, have a lot of connection with Joseph's inner world. But he used, of course, different language and different symbols to describe his own experiences.
Yeah, and I get the sense that in taking on this project, I mean, this was not simply the the man who could fly, but you are more interested in the implications, you know, for consciousness.
Absolutely.
What advice would you give to people? What can they learn from studying some of the things that Joseph could do?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, I don't think any of us want to be as extreme as Joseph. I mean, with his ascetic practices and self-punishment and all of that, I don't think that is necessary. But the essential point that I would stress is, first of all, to realize that there are all kinds of latent potentials in us, all of us. Just knowing that fact or tuning into that fact could change us. But what can we do to access those powers? That's the second question. And to put it in the simplest possible terms, as far as I can make out, when I compare the Catholic saints and the yogis and the Sufis and other traditions, they all seem to have in common the idea of quieting the mind, emptying the mind of all of the distractions, the desires, the conflicted feelings, and opening oneself up through some kind of spiritual practice, some kind of meditation, some kind of prayer, some kind of one-pointing, to use the yogic term, some way of clearing the mind and quieting the body so that we become more aware and more sensitive to what may in fact be out there and ready to descend into ourselves and our souls. And it's pretty as simple as that. And there are many ways that you can do it. I think all the different traditions have figured out methods of tuning in to these transcendent powers. Joseph just was very good at it in his own particular tradition and produced mind-boggling results. But that's what I would say.
Yeah, very well said. And I know that you've described his excursions as sort of like trips into a dream space. Maybe that dream space is a reality that we should aspire to.
I very much believe that. And in terms of the dream, you know, all of the things that Joseph did when he levitated are things that we can all do in our dreams, right? We can float. I'll bet you most people have had flying dreams. I've had a couple of them. They're wonderful, by the way. And in a dream, you can't be hurt. You can't be burned by fire. So I suggest that in one of the chapters of the book that there may be a compaction of two different kinds of space in the case of the mystics. And so I put that speculation out, and a number of physicists have actually responded and thought that there might be something to that idea. And so I'm very interested in getting responses from physicists to the idea of levitation. And just today, all the news about Einstein's prediction of gravity waves.
Yep.
Well, that's consistent with the idea that space and time can change. But of course, we don't know the connection between Joseph's, I mean, if there is the connection here with Einstein, but I wouldn't be surprised what's happening. Einstein showed that the physical reality is much more plastic and elastic than we thought. And they kept showing on the PBS images of the Earth changing its shape, gravity changing its function. Well, who knows? There may be a connection with levitation. I don't know, but I'm speculating here.
Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of time. I sense from listening to you that there may be another book in the making, so we'll stay tuned for that. We have been talking with Dr. Michael Grosso. The book is called The Man Who Could Fly. It's about St. Joseph of Cupertino and the mystery of levitation. Again, Michael's blog is consciousness-unbound.net. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, and let's please make it sooner than every 10 years on these interviews.
All right. Sounds good to me, Bob. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Pleasure to have you.
Bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of the recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Joe Nadal, Karen Gould, Stanley Muling, Glenna Irwin, Michael Tim, David Hayes, Miriam, Pierre Donna Mello, Matt Mello, Fred Feinstein, James Rafferty, and Doreen Malloy. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.